This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on November the 2nd, 2006. Should you have questions after listening to this recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Good morning. The Federal Election Commission meeting, open meeting for Thursday, November 2nd, 2006, will come to order. Our first item of business this morning, correction and approval of the minutes. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move for the consideration and approval of the minutes for October 18th, 2006, as set forth in Agenda Document 06-69.
Vice Chairman has moved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries by a vote of all six commissioners present. Our second item of business this morning, draft request for comment regarding purpose of disbursement entries that are filed with the Commission. And, Mr. Vice Chairman, we have a late submitted document.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move for the suspension of the rules for the timely submission of documents to consider Agenda Document 06-72.
Vice Chairman has moved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries by a vote of 6-0. And we have Richard Yule from the Council's office and also Rosie Smith on this matter. Mr. Yule.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As requested by the Commission, the draft before you in Agenda Document number 06-72 lists purpose of disbursement descriptions that are currently used by the Reports Analysis Division and the Audit Division during their preliminary review of the campaign finance reports filed with the Commission. The list provides examples of descriptions that are generally acceptable and descriptions that are generally unacceptable. They're offered to provide additional guidance to filers, and the document is formatted as a request for comment and would be published on the Commission's website with a 30-day comment deadline. We would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Yule. Discussion. For my part, I think this is a very positive project that the Commission has been working on over the last several weeks. As I think a lot of people know, the regulations are fairly sparse about types of disbursement purposes that will be sufficient, and that makes sense in a rulemaking side where you're establishing broad categories of descriptions that will be sufficient and those that will not. I think this effort is designed to try to provide more guidance, more concrete guidance in the particulars. And my sense of political committees is that the more guidance we provide, the more apt they're going to be to follow it. And then a lot of times, if we go the extra step to provide additional information that's not contained in the regulations, that can be helpful. I do think it's important to note that this is not a rulemaking. We're not purporting to amend the regulations, but I do think in our role in terms of issuing policy statements, we can provide guidance provides some gap filling in terms of areas where the regulations are silent. But I think this is an important project because it will see what the commenters say in terms of the types of descriptions that we think are sufficient and the types that are not sufficient. And I think each list is equally important. And my sense is that committees, when provided additional detail of what is sufficient and what isn't sufficient, will be more apt to follow the guidance and will have better descriptions in their reports and therefore better information available to the public. So I'm very supportive of this undertaking and look forward to the comments. I understand the comment deadline would be December 4th of this year. Discussion. Mr. Vice Chairman.
I would just like to share in all of those thoughts, and emphasize again that this is not a change in any of our rules, but instead is a clarification. As you noted, that our regulations provide some limited guidance as to the kinds of terms that are deemed to provide sufficient levels of clarity of descriptions and some terms that are not deemed to be sufficiently clear through the experience of our staff. And the review of tens of thousands of reports, they have come up with a more expansive list that they use, and I think that it is both helpful for those responsible for filling out these reports to have some sense if there are terms which we believe to be insufficiently clear as a description of the disbursement, and also to provide them with an opportunity to comment on the conclusions that we have reached in this area. So I also So I just wanted to express my thanks to the staff for the hard work that went into this, and would really appreciate thoughts from the regulated community on this, on these, on the this expansion of the list of terms that we consider appropriate and inappropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Further discussion, Commissioner Bonsikofsky.
I just want to point out, and this is something that all of the commissioners share, and that is all of us want to take what we all know is a very complex law and a very complex set of regulations, and we want to provide as much clarity for the regulated community so they know exactly what it is they need to do when they're reporting to us and taking all the other actions they do. And I want to compliment my colleagues and Mr. Stoltz also for coming up with these kind of recommendations so that we can provide clarity to the regulated community. And this is, you know, just the second of what we hope are a series of items that we're going to publish that will make do this. One of the other ones that we've asked for public comment on is the provisions we've just put out on minimum financial safeguards for committees to avoid embezzlements and problems. And this is another policy or instructions to committees so that they will have a better understanding of how to file accurate reports with us so they won't have problems. And it's a continuing effort by the commission today to do this.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also share in all of my colleagues' comments, and I think that part of what we're doing here is not only providing better guidance and clarity to the regulated community, but also providing greater transparency about our internal decision-making, and I think the more that we do that, the better for this agency. We like to say this is a disclosure agency, but I think for a lot of people who deal with us in the regulated community, it doesn't always appear very transparent how we come to some of the conclusions that we come to. So the more that we can do that, I think the better we will serve the regulated community, and the more that the agency can be held accountable for its decision making, which I think is also something that we need to be mindful of.
Thank you, Commissioner. Additional discussion on the document before us? Are we ready to entertain a motion? Commissioner Bonsikofsky.
I'll move. We approve and put it out for public comment.
Commissioner Bonsikofsky's move approval of agenda document number 06-72 regarding purpose of disbursements and that the agency release it to the general public for comment with a comment period through December 4th, 2006. Discussion on Commissioner Bonsikofsky's motion. Hearing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries by a vote of 6-0 and the document is approved. Thank you, Mr. Yule. Thank you very much. Our next item of business this morning is a couple of advisory opinions. The first one, advisory opinion 2006-29, which is sought on behalf of Representative Mary Bono of California. It's set out in agenda document number 0670. Ms. Shin, from the council's office. Now, is this your first appearance in a public session?
It is, Mr. Chairman.
Well, welcome. It is wonderful to have you with us and look forward to working with you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, commissioners. The draft advisory opinion before you responds to a request on behalf of Representative Mary Bono. Representative Bono serves the 45th Congressional District of California and is a candidate for re-election to the House of Representatives. The Palm Springs Desert Resorts Convention and Visitors Authority, an unincorporated entity, recently invited Representative Bono to host a 30-minute televised tourism infomercial. The infomercial would not disseminate Representative Bono's campaign materials or expressly advocate the election or defeat of any clearly identified federal candidates. The requester asked whether Representative Bono may appear in the tourism infomercial under the Act and Commission regulations. The draft concludes that Representative Bono may appear in the tourism infomercial because the infomercial would not be an in-kind contribution to the Bono campaign under the Commission's coordinated communication rules. Specifically, the infomercial would not satisfy any of the content standards in 11 CFR 109.21C. We have not received any comments on the draft opinion, and I will be happy to address any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Shin. Discussion of the draft. Are we ready to entertain a motion? Commissioner Weintraub.
Mr. Chairman, I move approval.
Commissioner Weintraub has moved approval of agenda document number 06-70 regarding advisory opinion 2006-29. Discussion of Commissioner Weintraub's motion to adopt. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries by a vote of 6-0, and the advisory opinion is adopted. Thank you, Ms. Shin. Thank
obviously
you very
much. Shin was extremely persuasive.
Very persuasive. All right, our next item of business this morning is Advisory Opinion 2006-30, which is sought by Act Blue. And we have Cheryl Hemsley from the Council's office. Amy Rothstein's also worked on this matter. And Rosie Smith. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Good morning, Commissioners. Before you, in Agenda Document 06-71, is a draft response to an advisory opinion request from Act Blue. Act Blue is a registered non-connected campaign, non-connected committee proposing to solicit and receive contributions earmarked for individuals who might but have not yet become candidates for the 2008 Democratic presidential nomination. Act Blue proposes to hold on to the earmarked contributions until after an individual registers a presidential campaign committee with the commission and then to forward those contributions to the individual within 10 days. Act Blue proposes to forward to the DNC contributions earmarked for any individual who has not become a candidate by the seventh day before the start of the 2008 Democratic nominating convention. The draft concludes that Act Blue may solicit and receive contributions earmarked for individuals before they become candidates, and that Act Blue must forward all earmarked contributions to those individuals within 10 days of receipt. If an individual rejects the funds, then Act Blue may either refund the contributions to the contributors or forward them to a political committee, such as the DNC. Act Blue must clearly state in its solicitations what it will do with the earmarked contributions if an individual returns them to Act Blue, and after forwarding the earmarked contributions, Act Blue should identify for the contributors the ultimate recipient of their contribution. We did receive two comments on the draft, and we'd be happy to discuss that and be happy to address any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you so much. Well, it's encouraging to have further evidence that the 2008 presidential election is underway.
It is.
And I thought we had a midterm election next week, but I guess these guys are not waiting for that. Discussion of the draft before us. Commissioner Bonsikowski.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, I'd like to thank the Office of General Counsel for the work they've done on this, and I think they did a good job in trying to construe our law and regulations. The problem here is, which is often the case with the election process, is we have people coming up with innovative ideas that are ahead of the way the law was written, the way our regulations were written, and weren't contemplated by it. And I think the problem here is that I think they did a good job. The problem is what's being proposed here is like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. I don't think it really fits into this. I would like to say the comment submitted by the Center for Competitive Politics I thought was very insightful in pointing out some of the problems with trying to fit this into our current regulations. I am going to make a motion from the table to change the draft that we have in front of us. And I have circulated to everyone, and I apologize, this was at very short notice, but didn't really start working on this until very late yesterday and made further changes this morning. And the changes that I've made would basically follow the previous AO that we put out in the We Lead situation. Now, that was before my time, but in that advisory opinion, we told We Lead that the 10-day forwarding requirement of our regulations would not begin to run until, and as they had proposed, the Democratic nominee had been chosen. And their whole question was, could they hang on to these until that happened and then forward them? And the way I've changed this is so that Act Blue can hang on to these solicitations until the prospective candidate, and we have to remember that these are prospective candidates that they are selecting and that they think might be prospective candidates. They're not talking to or not cooperating with the prospective candidates themselves. Until that prospective candidate becomes a candidate under our regulations. And one of the changes to the draft I've sent around to everyone that I think probably is a good idea is the way I had written this, I had said that Act Blue would forward all the earmarked contributions to the prospective candidates within 10 days of the date the prospective candidate becomes a candidate under the Act and the Commission's regulations. I think that's a little too broad, and one of the other commissioners shortly before the meeting this morning suggested that we ought to change that to when they register a principal campaign committee with us and officially become a committee. And I think that's a good idea. I have also inserted into this the provision, and I took this right out of the We Lead advisory opinion, on how they should do their reporting while they are holding these contributions when the person is not yet a candidate. And basically, I took the wording from We Lead and just simply changed it to Act Blue to say that Act Blue has to report the original source of each earmarked contribution on its report for the reporting period in which they were received, and they have to identify each one as earmarked for the prospective candidate. The only other change, and this was not made in what I circulated this morning, but this was brought to my attention a little earlier, is that, let me find it here, yeah. On page 6, I had changed it so that it said, it should say, if the candidate deposits the contributions, then the candidate must deposit them in the campaign committee account, as opposed to what it was in the original language, which was saying that it had to be an account that's separate from any accounts containing the candidate's personal funds. And this would make that correction. The other thing that I thought was a very good point that was raised by the comment was that the original AO basically says that if Act Blue sends, you know, more than $5,000 to the prospective candidate when they're still prospective candidate, then they're automatically they become a candidate. I think that view ignores our specific regulation on testing the waters, and I don't think there's any reason why, if someone is in the testing the waters stage, you know, they're within our regulation and doing everything that our regulation says, that they should not be able to receive this contribution from Act Blue and use it for testing the waters. That money is not going to disappear. It has to be reported by Act Blue. If the testing the waters individual actually becomes a candidate, then that money is converted into contributions. It all then has to be reported. And I think, to me, that's a better way of handling this. But I realize that this is kind of a difficult situation, and there are a lot of new issues here that we haven't really raised. So I'd be very interested in what my fellow commissioners think about doing it this way.
Thank you, Commissioner. Discussion. Vice Chairman Lenhart.
I guess I wanted to try and be clear, because I'm not sure I understood as you got. I understood everything until we got to testing the water. So, and my understanding is that your draft would change it so that the transfer that Act Blue could hold the funds until the individual became a candidate, declared themselves a candidate under our rules, and then the funds could be transferred to them. But when you got to the testing the waters part, my sense was you were saying they could transfer to them before they declared their candidacy, and they could use those funds for testing the waters activities. Is that what you're suggesting?
Commissioner Von Sikorski.
What I didn't want to have happen is the way the original draft was written, if an individual, one of the prospective candidates, is in the testing the water stage, and Act Blue decides to send them, you know, sends them the money, and it's over $5,000. Basically, the advisory opinion says, okay, well, you may be in the testing the water stage, but you're now a candidate because you've received more than $5,000 in contributions. And what I'm trying to prevent, because I don't think that this is the correct under the law, is that the sending of that money converts the person who's testing the waters into a candidate without their permission, because they've gotten this money. I see no reason why, if you're in the testing the waters stage, why you can't receive a contribution from Act Blue, because we all know under the regulation, if you're in the testing the waters stage, you can raise money. And the fact that you're receiving money from Act Blue as opposed to someone else that you've deliberately solicited for the money shouldn't automatically turn you into a candidate if you're in the testing the water stage and you're following our regulations along those lines.
Vice Chairman Linhart.
No, I'm sorry, Commissioner Mason.
I just wanted to understand, because I think I see a dissonance. If the point of confusion is that under Commissioner Von Spakovsky's other proposed amendments, the person doesn't get the money until they're already a candidate.
Right.
So in other words, they're already, in order to get the money, they have to be a candidate, and so testing the waters no longer applies. And I think that's the point of confusion there. So I don't think any of us would disagree on your theoretical point that under the opinion as presented by OGC, where the money has to be forwarded within the 10 days, that if a candidate receives $7,000 or $8,000 through Act Blue, that would still allow them to remain within testing the waters otherwise. But the point is, if they can't forward the money until they're already a candidate, then testing the waters no longer applies. I think that's the...
Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
Let me answer that by saying that, and I'm sorry, I understand the confusion now, that my point is I don't think under our regulations that the 10-day forwarding provision will be triggered so that they have to send them the money until the person they consider prospective candidate becomes registered with us as a candidate. However, if they've gotten the money, if they've gotten a contribution for prospective candidate and they're holding the money, and they discover that in fact the person is now testing the waters, is collecting contributions for testing the waters within our regulations, and they're following our regulations as they should, I don't think that our regulations would prevent them from at that point, rather than holding on to the money until the person becomes a candidate, sending it to them in the testing the waters stage. And then they follow our regulations, you know, to the letter on what they have to do with that in the testing the waters stage.
Mr. Vice Chairman, yeah. And then I'll recognize Commissioner Walther and Commissioner Weintraub.
Vice Chairman. Yeah, the hesitation I have with this is I recall the testing the waters regulations are reasonably specific about the kinds of communications the potential candidate can make about their candidacy and limits their ability to, you know, fully say that they're running for office. My read of what Act Blue was, how they were soliciting these funds, were very explicit that these funds were being solicited to contribute to these people to make them President of the United States. And so I wasn't entirely clear to me that the way these solicitations were being structured would fall within our testing the waters regs.
And if I could add, and I'll recognize Commissioner Walther, Commissioner Weintraub, it may be that the requester, and please, counsel, correct me if I'm wrong about this, may be that they're contemplating monies being given to the candidates when they file as presidential candidates. I'm looking at page 5 of the AOR where it says the earmarked contributions will be given to the prospective candidates as soon as he or she forms a presidential campaign committee. So it may be that the requester is contemplating that being the trigger, you know, someone filing as a candidate with us and not contemplating necessarily giving money to someone who's just testing the waters. But I offer that as a possible way of approaching this.
I think that's right, Mr. Chairman. The requester is not asking about what happens if some of these people on our list of prospective candidates are testing the waters and others are not. They don't ask us, do the forwarding requirements apply to those who are in that testing the waters mode? They're specifically contemplating waiting until the announcement of candidacy or whatever other factor triggers candidacy actually happens. So since some of these testing the waters considerations were not raised specifically in the request, we did not delve into them in the draft itself, though obviously, I think, as everyone recognizes, it informs the considerations here because, indeed, some of these people on their list, maybe all of them, who knows, may be in a testing the waters mode. And I think we take Commissioner Von Spakovsky's point that this organization has come up with something that our regulations don't specifically address one way or the other, hence they're asking us about it. And if this money would be flowing to these individuals earlier, then I would think if that's what the commission wishes to do, then yes, we do have regulations as to what they can do with it in terms of testing the waters and using it for those purposes. I hope that answers your question.
Well, that is helpful, and I think in that, and I'm going to recognize Commissioner Walther, I think in that regard, if the requester is really seeking the trigger to be when the candidate files as a candidate, and if we were to go in the direction that Commissioner Von Spakovsky's advocated, the 10-day rule would kick in there, then some of the administrative matters associated with testing the waters we wouldn't have to deal with. Would kind of fall away, so that might actually make it easier to deal with.
I'd be happy to, if we don't have to deal with that, I'm happy to drop that out of it, since that's causing confusion to what is already a complex situation.
Sure. Commissioner Walther.
I tend to support the approach taken by the Center for Competitive Politics and Commissioner Yvonne Spakovsky. It seems to me that in a case like this, if the donor wants to make a gift or a contribution, only if the person becomes a candidate. The person is not a candidate until something occurs. And if the condition at that point, it's kind of like a trust. When they register as a candidate, that's when you get the money. And really, there's no authority for that person to receive the money until that condition is met. So the recipient, the initial recipient, is really akin to a trustee. There's no discretion involved. At that point, if there's never a registration, it goes automatically, say, in this case, to the DNC. I read the request as being one where the money is to be spent for a candidate, somebody who's going to run. And in that case, it seems to me it would complicate our rationale a little bit if we got back into the testing the water thing, because then you change considerably some of the considerations. But to me, I can see the rationale behind the OGC's opinion, but I do think in this particular case there shouldn't be a requirement to deliver the money in 10 days because the person's not a candidate.
Commissioner Weintraub, you would sought recognition.
I didn't actually, but I'm happy
just
to talk.
Sooner or later.
Yeah, but you anticipated that I was thinking about it. I have to admit that I have gone back and forth on this. Commissioner Von Spakovsky and I visited yesterday about this, and we talked about testing the waters. We talked about a lot of what he said here today at the table. And it is a problem for us that our regulations contemplate, you know, what people had in mind at the time we wrote the regulations, and they don't contemplate new ideas that people come up with down the road. And then people come up with new ideas, and we don't want to squelch all innovation, but we have to try and figure out, well, what does it mean under our regulations? How do they fit together? And it's not always a very good fit. And this is, I think, an example of one that just, you know, sort of looks like some of our regulations, but isn't quite. I think that what you put together was actually had two alternatives in it at the same time. You know, that if we were going to follow OGC's approach of saying that they have to hand the money over within 10 days of receiving it, then we would want to offer the opportunity of the candidates or prospective candidates using it for testing the waters, maybe. You know, that, I think it still raises issues about how the money was solicited. If somebody solicited the money specifically for the purpose of, you know, send this money to support the candidacy, the actual candidacy of X candidate, you know, it's not clear under our testing the waters candidate, even though the candidate themselves didn't solicit the money that way, whether putting an intermediary in between would allow them to then say, well, we're just going to use it for testing the waters, even though it was solicited apparently for a specific candidacy. I don't know whether we would want to. I think there's a real issue there, but I don't know that we would necessarily want to encourage the development of what could become a ruse, where somebody starts raising money for the candidate and is able to raise it in a very direct and focused way for their candidacy, and the candidate says, well, I haven't made up my mind, so I'm just going to take it for testing the waters. And I'm not saying that's what's going on here, but I think it might be opening the door. So I appreciate your what I understand your as your willingness to say, well, we'll take that piece out if we can just say actually gets to hold on to the money until 10 days after whoever declares their candidacy or a week before the convention, whichever comes first, I guess. It's a little bit troubling to me I'm not sure whether it's a great idea to be separating the candidate from the fundraising, to have people out there raising a lot of money on candidates' behalf without the candidate having to take ownership of the process. I'm not sure whether exactly what we're opening the door to. This particular proposal doesn't strike me as troubling. I can't see anything in it that makes me think this is going to undermine the law in some way. It's going to, it in a, of itself, is going to have a bad result. But my concern is that I'm not sure what else we're opening the door to and what it might lead to. And one thing that I've been concerned about is we've seen, particularly in the internet area, an increasing number of fraudulent solicitations. And I wonder whether allowing organizations to raise a lot of money without having any, and sit on it for a while the candidates are making up their mind whether they want to be candidates or not, while the prospective candidates are making up their minds whether they want to be candidates or not, I don't know whether that might open new opportunities for internet scams, where people say, 12 months from now I'm going to give this money to your favorite candidate, and then somehow or other 12 months passes and the money's not there anymore somehow. I mean, that's, obviously that would be a problem independently, but I am a little bit concerned about it. The longer the period passes, the more that potential, I think, is there. But you're right, we open the door to it and we lead. All this is to say, I think I might be willing to, with some reservations, allow the Act Blue to do more or less what they want to do. I think we might want to toss it back to OGC to reformulate the draft to make sure that we've thought about everything, since we all kind of focused on this late, and I know that you did this draft pretty much at the last minute. I think I'm prepared to support the result, but I think we need to watch it as it goes forward, see what else comes down the pike, and be prepared perhaps to act in the future if we see that people are using this as permission to do other things that might seem like the logical next step, but are not necessarily within what we're contemplating today, because we've got the same problem that we have with the regulations. The regulations didn't contemplate this, and we may not necessarily contemplate everything else that's going to come next.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. Commissioner Mason?
Let me add a note of dissent from the Happy Concord. And first, let me note on the, I have been, as all of us have, in the position of coming to the table the morning of a meeting or late with a new idea. But I just want to note, we received this on September 12th. And on September 14th, I sent an email expressing some concerns about this, which went right to the point that we're debating now. And OGC addressed my concerns in their draft, and so I didn't. There was nothing else to say about it. But I saw this issue. I raised the issue, and I don't think it puts us in the best circumstance to not have put out an alternative draft and then come in. So, but I'm not gonna make that the principal point of my objection. The questions I raised then, and I also want to acknowledge, which everybody has said, that the problem we're presented with is that the situation and the idea was not contemplated not only by our regs, but it was not contemplated by the statute. And you can go back and look at the statute, and they treat things in terms of candidate and so on. And so I think the problem that leads us to is that a formalistic reading of, for instance, the definition of a candidate, well, you're not a candidate until you've actually received $5,000 in contributions and registered with us and so on, isn't very persuasive to me, because we're outside of the formal structure of the statute and regs. And so that, you know, that sort of have they registered or not distinction strikes me as not being terribly persuasive in a situation where we understand that the whole set series of transactions hadn't been contemplated by the Act. But I do want to note a couple of things in the Act that push me in the other direction. One is the earmarking provision itself, which is 441A8, says that for purposes of limitations, all contributions made by a person, either directly or indirectly on behalf of a particular candidate, and so on, shall be treated as contributions from such person to such candidate. Now, that's absolutely critical to the whole structure here, because what Act Blue wants is they want to receive money that constitutes a contribution under the Federal Election Campaign Act, but they don't want it to be a contribution to Act Blue, right? Because then Act Blue wouldn't be able to turn around and give the money to a candidate. And so they are very explicitly taking advantage is the wrong word, because I don't mean there's anything proper about it, but intending to use or operate under this provision of the regulation, which says this is a contribution not to them but to the candidate. But then, for purposes of the transmittal regulation, they want to turn around and say, oh, well, that person isn't a candidate yet, and so we don't have to do it. Well, again, because the statute wasn't contemplating this sort of activity, you know, that sort of reading isn't completely implausible. But it's key to me that this starts out with Act Blue saying, we want this to be treated as a conduit contribution, boom, under this section of the Act, which contemplates contributions from the person to the candidate. And then they want to break that off, you know, at somewhere in the chain. And I think a more straightforward reading would be to say, well, if you want to operate under the conduit regulation, then fine, do that and do everything else you would normally do under the conduit regulation, which includes the forwarding requirements elsewhere in the Act. I also want to comment on the multiple purposes I perceive in the forwarding requirements, and because in Act Blue we talked about some certain disclosure purposes and keeping people from hiding cash on hand, and I think that is one of the purposes. But I think another purpose was to prevent people from stockpiling cash in you know any form, and this represents essentially the piggy bank where cash would be put and be available to a candidate, and it opens up this easily imaginable possibility that we already have enough trouble with leadership PACs and testing the waters and so on. So are you a candidate or are you not a candidate, and you know, and what's this all for? And this would be, you know, one more step in that direction. The other purpose that has been discussed at the commission table about the deposit and forwarding requirements is to ensure that candidates own up to contributions by certain persons. And former Commissioner Sandstrom used to be fond of saying, well, what if somebody receives a contribution from John Gotti or you know, somebody notorious, and wants to use the money but doesn't want to put it on their pre, you know, campaign report. Can they keep it in the desk drawer for
until Mr. Gotti is cleared?
Well, no, until
later date,
and until their final pre-election report is filed, or even after the election, so they can report avoid the 24 or 48 hour reporting obligations. But they know the money's there, so they can, you know, can spend it and so on. And while that one's a little bit preposterous, the idea that they have an obligation to disclose their donors and sources and so on. Now, that wouldn't be totally frustrated here if we require Act Blue to disclose these upon receipt. But I just want to note, I think the forwarding requirements have broader and more multiple purposes than just the one reference out of the We Lead AO would conclude. And I think the purposes for the forwarding requirement would be served by requiring forwarding here. I also want to note in the statute and our regulations that a candidate is defined not only as someone who receives contributions, but as someone who, I'm going to get the word right because it's not a term that's otherwise defined, has given his or her consent to another person to receive contributions. And so consent isn't a term of art that's otherwise defined in the statute, and we haven't construed it a lot. But what our regulations say is that if we're aware of fundraising activity on behalf of a candidate, we will send a disavowal notice. And that was the very specific question I raised in my my email back in September, is how would that work in a situation such as this one? I can't whatever people were thinking about when the disavowal reg was set up, I don't know. I think there were some draft Kennedy committees at that time, which may have been specifically in the mind of the commissioners when the reg was being written. But it strikes me that this sort of thing would fit pretty squarely within the contemplation of the disavowal regulation, and so we would get a report from a PAC that says the PAC had raised $50,000, $100,000 for a named individual for their presidential campaign. And I can't see how we would avoid at that point sending the named individual a letter saying, did you approve this or not? And then I think we run into a complication, because if the candidate says no, well, you know, what implication does that have for the funds? And particularly, what implication does that have if the candidate says, well, no, I didn't approve this fundraising, but a month or 2 months or 3 months later, they in fact decide to run for president, ActBlue sends them the money, and they take it. That seems to be a sort of a pernicious sort of situation to set up, because Commissioner Weintraub was talking about I can't remember exact words, but about sort of hiding and the different possibilities that you know would be produced by something like that. And I think that just puts the candidates and us and everybody involved in a difficult situation in terms of saying, well, did they mean it when they sent the letter disavowing it? And you know, what does it mean to disavow the fundraising but not disavow the candidacy, and so on? And I also raised the question about public statements, which sort of fits more under the testing the waters arrangement, because one of the things that's fairly clear to me from the request is ActBlue wants to act in a way to get early interest in the campaign and be the focus of early interest in the campaign. And I take it they're going to release this information, and they're going to say Senator Wellstone has this amount of contributions, and Senator Clinton has this amount, and you know, Senator, you know, all these other people, and then these people are going to go on Russert or some other show. And the host is going to ask them, they're going to say, well, you're the leading recipient of contributions under ActBlue. Are you planning to run or not? They love to ask that, you know. And then what does the candidate say? Well, gosh, I'm flattered by all the support. Is that an expression of consent for the fundraising? You know, I think, and so while those problems are there already and difficult enough, and I note somebody was dinging Senator Biden for having the temerity to actually say he was running and not say the things he's supposed to say, I think it becomes very much multiplied when there's this big pot of money with their name on it, you know, sitting there waiting to be transmitted. And so, you know, I think the key difference between this situation and We Lead and the opinions that led up to We Lead, which had to do with other unidentified nominees, is that the individual is identified. We know who it is. I mean, it was very clear in We Lead, at least when that was submitted, that nobody knew. I mean, at that point, I believe Howard Dean was sort of the presumptive nominee, and that didn't work out real well for Governor Dean. And so there's certainly been lots of situations, and the predecessor opinions were situations in which it was very clear that, for instance, you had a one party that was obviously going to have a very competitive primary in a particular House or Senate race, another party's presumptive nominee had a clear path, and partisans on one side were feeling like, hey, we don't want our nominee to be behind the eight ball, and so whoever it is, we don't care which one it is, but whoever is our party, we want him to get the money. And so I think that's a sufficient distinction. And I'd say, frankly, if if we made an error and we think we can't rely on that distinction, then I'd go back and question the premise of We Lead and those others in terms of the whole idea of allowing people to stockpile money. I think we, at least I'd be inclined to reexamine that. I'd also note that in these situations where we don't have statutory or regulatory guidance that lays out for the specific way, I think we can rely a little bit on common sense and say, well, whose money is this? You know, in other words, if the FECA weren't here, what would be happening? And the answer is, if the FECA weren't here and there weren't all these significant consequences to the receipt of contributions, then this money would go direct to the candidate. That would be the natural thing. Even if there were some reason that an organization would want to collect the money and act as a conduit, again, absent FECA, that they would want to get that money in the hands of the candidate as soon as possible, the prospective candidate. And so in that sense, when we're sort of dealing with the again, I don't want to be harsh with the requester because I don't think they're suggesting anything nefarious, but the gaming of the statute in the terms of where we're going to use the conduit reg for this purpose and the candidate definition for another purpose and so on like that, when we're in that situation where we're mixing and matching definitions of the statute, to step back and say, well, if we didn't have all this statutory structure here, what would be the natural thing is a fair question to ask, and that's yet another reason that pushes me to say that the forwarding requirements ought to apply.
Thank you, Commissioner Mason. Additional discussion? Commissioner Bonsikowski.
Well, Commissioner Mason makes a good argument, as always. And I guess you get to say you told us so, right, for 2 months ago. But I would point out that I actually think this is very similar to the We Lead situation because, you know, you talk about being able to stockpile money. Well, that's what the We Lead situation leads to, too, because, you know, we told them they wouldn't have to do the forwarding until the nominee basically been chosen at the nomination, at the committee. Now, all of us here know that national conventions these days are not real conventions, that people are chosen in the primaries. And 5 months before the convention, because of primary wins, everyone knew who the Democratic nominee was and was going to be, and that the selection at the convention is just a procedural step. So they could have forwarded this money under, you know, the arguments you're making, you know, 5 months before the convention, but we told them it was okay to do that. I don't think there's a problem because there are reporting requirements. We told We Lead there would be reporting requirements, and I think this situation would contemplate it. I'm not saying this is the ideal solution, but I think, given the way our regs are written, that this is the better solution, and it follows the prior advisory opinion we put out. You know, one of the problems with saying they have to forward the money immediately is we have regs on what a candidate has to do when they get the money and hand it to their treasurer and give it to the principal campaign committee, and obviously when their prospective candidate, it's impossible for them to follow their regulation because they have no principal campaign committee and they have no treasurer. So we with the original AO draft, we would be setting up a situation that simply can't be met by the prospective candidate. They can't meet our regulations if they get the money.
Council, please correct me if I'm wrong. I think in the We Lead scenario, perhaps what we focused on was, and what the requester indicated, is that when the Democratic National Committee certified that a candidate had enough delegates to be the presumptive nominee, that would be the trigger for the 10-day rule. And I seem to recall the requester talking about how that was going to work within the Democratic National Committee. So it might very well be, and it certainly has been in the past before the convention when that happened, but please correct me if I'm wrong about that. I don't have that opinion in front of me. But
I think the situation in We Lead, Mr. Chairman, was similar to this in that it was, they used a date 7 days before the convention, as here, I think on the theory that that was the date at which time the DNC could actually verify the delegates.
My understanding was that was the latest date, that if no nominee
that was right
by then, right, then they'd move to the default option.
But it was that by that date.
As opposed to that would be the date when the money would move.
That's right.
Right, right. And then when if they could certify in March or April who the nominee was as certified by that committee,
that's
by the
right.
National Committee, then that would be the...
That's right. It was, but not later than...
7 days before the National Convention.
Yes,
right.
That's correct.
If, in fact, it were a broker convention or something that we are not familiar with these days, but used to be quite common. Further discussion. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I said before that I thought it was troubling, and maybe there isn't a perfect solution, but I think that Commissioner Mason was very persuasive, and with apologies to Commissioner Von Spakovsky, I think he pushed me over the edge in the other direction. I think that you're right. I also have been troubled by the same issue that you raised, Commissioner Von Spakovsky, as to, okay, so what do you do with this money when, if ActBlue were to raise the money and there isn't a campaign committee to send it to? I mean, do we... The thought has crossed my mind that they could find themselves in a situation of writing out a very large personal check to the candidate, which might not be such a good idea. Although I suspect in reality, if we were to give them the answer that council has drafted, that probably wouldn't happen, because it wouldn't be it wouldn't make sense for them to go ahead with their model. But with apologies, Commissioner Von Spakovsky, Commissioner Mason talked me out of it.
Well, then this discussion should disprove the idea that these debates do not matter and that people don't listen to what colleagues are raising. I think this has been a very substantive debate. Vice Chairman Lenhart.
Yeah, that's where I wanted to start. I mean, I think that this is instructive for in a couple of ways, and I think that it highlights something that I have witnessed since arriving here, which I didn't anticipate, quite honestly, when I got here, which is that I frequently find the commissioners really struggling to try and ascertain what the appropriate application of the law is to the facts that present themselves, especially in the context of changing political tactics and changing technology, and that there really is, I've seen over the last couple of days, folks really struggling to try and discern what the correct answer is here. And secondarily, that the comments make a difference, that the submissions by interested parties to the draft changed thinkings and generated, sort of thoughts and arguments about what the law is and what the appropriate application of the law was that were not occurring in these halls before those comments came in. And so to the degree that people try and discern whether there's value in submitting comments into the black box of decision-making here, I mean, this is, I think, a manifestation, a public manifestation of that they do make a difference and that they do, change the way the debate is framed and how people are thinking about these issues. I think that I also find Commissioner Mason's approach to this persuasive, and I think the most important feature for me is the statute itself, and to the degree that ActBlue is perceived as able to solicit contributions to candidates under our statute, that it makes less sense to me that they would then not similarly be treated as candidates for the purposes of the earmarking provisions of the statute. And I have struggled for a little while as to how one could be a candidate for the purposes of the solicitation of contributions but not a candidate for the purposes of the transmittal of those contributions. So at the end of the day, I think my sense is that while there are analytical problems with the staff draft, and I think Commissioner Von Spakovsky correctly used the metaphor of pounding round pegs into square holes or vice versa, that I think that it comes somewhat more closer to the statutory structure and language than the alternative.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Just a couple thoughts from my perspective, and I think this has been a very substantive debate here this morning and difficult issues in front of us, and I agree that a lot of these issues arise through innovations that occur in the political process that often outstrip agencies whose rules or regulations often are been developed many years before. One of the premises that I've come to a lot of these types of issues over the last several years has been to try to facilitate hard dollar fundraising in whatever form, when it's possible. whether it's by individuals or political action committees, connected PACs, non-connected PACs. Congress made a fundamental judgment in McCain-Feingold to enact the soft money ban against the national parties and also with respect to federal candidates and office holders. And I think part of that judgment was an intent to increase the importance of hard money activities. And political action committees, connected and non-connected, have clearly sought to step into the void there where possible and play a broader role in federal elections. And I see that as fully congruent with McCain-Feingold, as complementary to McCain-Feingold. So in a lot of these questions, that's been the first premise that I've taken into the discussion, is to see if there's a way to facilitate increased hard dollar activity. And I thought that We Lead was an important step in that direction and was an appropriate innovation in our interpretation of the law, and I freely confess it was an innovation. There had been advisory opinions on the books for many years that had placed obstacles in doing what We Lead sought to do. But I think that we fairly read the statute and the regulations at that time to allow an organization such as that after all was raising hard money, that would be fully reported, to be able to do that and then make the contributions, give the contributions to the candidates, a candidate in that circumstance, once that person became the nominee of the Democratic Party. And also I think that opinion was very important in making clear that non-connected PACs can incur fundraising costs in connection with that activity and can do so independently of candidates and therefore not have that count against the contribution limit that the PAC has towards the candidate. Because if the outcome had been the other way, it wouldn't have been practical for We Lead or any other non-connected PAC to undertake that activity. Here, I think Commissioner Mason really has framed the key issue here. For me, what's more challenging about this situation than We Lead is exactly the statutory language that Commissioner Mason outlined, the earmarking provision at 441AA8, which on its face conditions the ability to collect earmark contributions on them being done on behalf of a candidate. And in We Lead, the individuals at issue there were candidates. But We Lead sought to not move the money to the candidates until they became the nominee of the Democratic Party. Here, as I understand it, it's individuals who have not become candidates, but may become candidates. And so that would be the next step in the progression of the development of the law. And I think Commissioner Mason raises very important points about that. I think I told my colleagues coming into the meeting that I am inclined to support Commissioner von Spakovsky's approach here, and I think if he offers a motion, I would support it. But I have to say that I think the statutory obstacles here are more challenging than they were in We Lead. And I think it is possible to interpret the provisions in a congruent way to allow the activity to occur without the 10-day rule, but I have to freely acknowledge that it's more challenging to do that. But I think Commissioner von Spakovsky is absolutely right that there would be no erosion of the disclosure regime if this opinion were adopted as modified by the commissioner, because after all, ActBlue would have to disclose the contributions that it was collecting for these individuals. That would be available to the public as time went on. And then once the individuals became candidates, of course, and accepted the funds, the candidates themselves would have to disclose the contributions. And I agree with Commissioner Mason that, as we articulated in We Lead, that the core goal, perhaps not the only goal, but one of the core goals of the 10-day forwarding rule is to maintain the accuracy of disclosure reports and not have a scenario where candidates or organizations are sitting on money, stockpiling money, and nobody in the public has an ability to be informed of that fact. And I think the fact that ActBlue would be disclosing these funds as they're collected over time mitigates against that possibility. And it would be on that understanding that I would be comfortable proceeding in that fashion. But I think it's a long way of saying that I think it's a very tough set of issues. I do think that there's more challenging issues here than we faced in We Lead. And for me, anyway, it is the earmarking statute, that the 441AA8 language that talks about earmarking on behalf of a candidate, and the fact that here we're talking about potential candidates, that makes this more challenging for me. But I would be prepared to support Commissioner von Spakovsky's approach. if he offers a motion to that effect. Additional discussion. Commissioner Bonsikowski.
Commissioner Weintraub, you didn't need to apologize. This is a difficult issue, and I know we've been going back and forth on how to handle this. But I would like to point out just one thing, and that is I think part of the linchpin of what Commissioner Mason was talking about and what the Vice Chairman and you were just talking about was the fact that, and I believe this is what was said, I apologize if I'm incorrect, that ActBlue is going to be soliciting contributions, saying that they're soliciting contributions for candidates for the presidential nomination. That is not correct. If you look at the request, page 1, paragraph 1, they say that they're going to be soliciting funds, and they are going to be telling the people that are soliciting funds that these would be funds, contributions for his prospective candidates. In other words, they're telling people in the solicitation, they're not saying it's a candidate, they're saying this is somebody we think is a prospective candidate. And I think that might, frankly, make a difference. A very technical point, but that's what we're talking about here, very technical points. And I think that to me makes a difference. I would like to make a motion, but I'm wondering, Mr. Chairman, whether... let me ask OGC, if I may. What is our deadline for the response to this? Is it today?
It's November 7th.
November 7th.
Oh, we're way ahead of schedule. November 7th?
we're far out here.
Forget that 60-day deal. We'll do some 55.
Or whatever we're good.
And in fairness, this does concern the 2008 election, so even though it may be underway, it's at least some months away.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would like to suggest to my colleagues that we consider taking a five-minute break to discuss this.
Absolutely, and I will recognize Commissioner Mason before our break. Commissioner.
Well, I'd be happy to have this go down on 3-3 today, but in fairness to my colleague, I just want to note we have a meeting on the 9th. I believe I saw the requester's attorney here, and so if I think one of the elements that I mentioned that bothered me was that, you know, we had a blue draft that got comment. We, you know, have a white draft that nobody else has seen, and so I think one possible outcome would be to ask the council if he can get an extension, and among other things, that would allow us to have another week and would allow interested parties to comment on the alternative draft that's been put forward.
All right, well, why don't we take a five-minute break and discuss that point and just what we think the next step ought to be in these deliberations. So we'll reconvene at about 11:15. Why don't we get resume our session here? I understand that there's an interest in holding over the ActBlue opinion until next Thursday, November 9th, so that Commissioner Bonsikowski perhaps could release his proposal to the public and people can comment on the issues that we've been talking about this morning, and then we take this up 1 week from today. I understand that the council for the requester will have to see if the requesting party is willing to grant the commission, I guess it would amount to a two-day extension, and if so, we would plan to take this up on November 9th with further discussion of Commissioner Bonsikowski's approach and the other approaches we've talked about today. If there's no objection to proceeding that way, we'll plan to do that. Hearing none, then, this matter will be held over until November 9th for further discussion if the requester grants an extension of time for that. And our final item of business this morning is management and administrative matters concerning the agency. Mr. Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just wanted to make the commission aware that on election day, as we've done in past election cycles, we will be posting on our website a list of frequently asked election day questions designed to assist the public in seeking out and locating assistance in voting, finding their voting places, and so forth. So that will be going up on our website next week to clarify for folks that while those aren't items that we can directly help them with, we certainly can point them in the right direction.
Thank you, Mr. Scott. You're very eloquent and very diplomatic, as always. I understand during the Florida recount we got quite a few calls asking about our position regarding that recount. We said not our issue.
There were a few calls about hanging chads, yes.
Okay, and we can renew that that mantra in the days ahead if necessary. With that, then, that completes our agenda this morning, and we will be in recess, and our next meeting will be after the midterm election on Thursday, November 9th, at which time we will take up the Ag Blue matter at that time if the requester grants us the extension. With that, this meeting is adjourned.